Howdy, folks. Welcome to Lords of Order, a DC's Dr. Fate fan podcast. I'm your host, Ed Moore, and beware, there will be spoilers. Hey, guys. In retrospect and kind of after editing, last month, maybe I was a little grumpier than normal with that episode. I don't know what was going on. Got up on the wrong side of the rock. Who knows? I apologize for that. I'll try not to be that dour and grumpy if I can help it. If you want to get in touch with me about my grumpiness, you can catch me on Twitter as Teal Productions. Teal is in the color T-E-A-L. Teal Productions also has a Facebook page, as does Lords of Order. The Dr. Fate Fan Podcast at gmail.com is the email address, and I post the episodes on bigtimenoise.com/Dr. Fate. That's the website. All-Star Comics presents Super Squad. Number 59 is the book I'm looking at. Now, it is cover dated March-April 1976, but Mike's Amazing World indicates it was probably on sale December 16th, 1975. Now, this is scripted for us by Jerry Conway with a plot assist from Paul Levitz, penciled by Mr. Rick Estrada, inked by Wally Wood and Al Sirois, colored by, who knows, a tribe of many, perhaps, lettered by Ben Oda, with a cover by Ernie Chan and Tatiana Wood. Something, for some reason, I've also been neglecting to do is to indicate where these books can be found if you don't have the original. This particular issue also shows up in DC Special Blue Ribbon Digest number 3 from 1980, Justice Society number 1 from 2006, Showcase Presents All-Star Comics number 1 from 2011, and All-Star Comics Only Legends Live Forever from 2019. Now, on the cover, we have yet another rather striking image. We have a gentleman who appears to be made of stone, punching with one fist the Flash to such an extent that he's flying towards us as we're looking at the cover, his helmet falling off, while in his other hand, he is holding suspended this Rocky figure, upside down, Power Girl, Rocky, I mean, made of rock, not like not that Rocky. Rushing up to try to help, we can see between this giant man of stone's legs are Green Lantern, Wildcat, Dr. Midnight, Star-Spangled Kid, and Hawkman. It appears that we are, I don't know, it looks kind of weird, actually, the way it's designed. There's machines from lower right cover around behind everything to lower left cover in a nice arc. Space, but it looks like maybe the space is a part of a picture, and then the rest of the cover is not. So, yeah, I think after reading the book, what it's supposed to be is we're looking through a viewport into space on a satellite that Brainwave has, but that's not necessarily the way that it's drawn on the cover. Nonetheless, we are told that Hawkman, Flash, Green Lantern, Wildcat, Dr. Fate, Dr. Midnight, Star-Spangled Kid, Power Girl, and Robin should all appear in the book as they are on the roll call. This opening splash page, the All-Star Super Squad faces destruction when Brainwave blows up, and it's an image of Brainwave shooting out bolts of psionic energy and knocking for a loop, or perhaps unconscious, Dr. Fate, Wildcat, Flash, Dr. Midnight, Hawkman, and Green Lantern. While screaming, "Die, Justice League, die!" the narrator tells us, far above the placid green hills of Earth 2, a bizarre scene erupts into fury as the madman called Brainwave lashes out at his most hated enemies and destroys them. So we pop into the book in midst of a fight. Brainwave here in this panel is punching out Wildcat. Next panel, he's knocking Green Lantern for a loop with a psychic bolt. Standing legs akimbo with the muscle man two-armed pose over top, Flash, Dr. Fate, Hawkman, Wildcat, Dr. Midnight, and Green Lantern, who are all laid out on the floor at his feet. He continues his thoughts here, "For I so very much enjoyed our little game, and I'll hate to see you go, but go you must." Final panel of the page, "Since you are, after all, only images created by my most remarkable brain. Old friend, have I kept you waiting? Are you done with your playing, Brainwave? Please, can we begin? Waiting is all I have left, old friend." So someone else is on the satellite with Brainwave, and we see that the fight that opened the book was indeed one of Brainwave's doing, either to stroke his ego or out of practice for practice purposes, or who knows, you know, maybe it's like the X-Men with their big secret underground danger room or something like that. Brainwave is, and for those of you that don't know, X-Men is a Marvel Comics group. Brainwave is doing something, and he's not alone up here. So the two of them now we see. His old friend is a stooped older man walking with a cane, everything covered, large trench coat, big floppy hat. You can't really see his face. He's very small and frail and very old manish compared to the bustling Brainwave. So the two of them have this plan, we find. Next, we cut to the JSA's brownstone, where Flash and Power Girl and Wildcat are arriving. Wildcat really is all bristly because of the way Power Girl is acting, because the way Power Girl is a girl, because he just got carried two-thirds of the way around the world by Power Girl, and she seems extremely nonplussed that she just carried the former heavyweight champion of the world in her arms. They come to the brownstone. She wants to go in and be a member. Wildcat says, absolutely not. Only full JSA members are allowed in. Meanwhile, the Flash is vibrating inside to go inside and unlock the door to let everyone in. Nonetheless, Power Girl does go in. She goes in first as Wildcat, ever the surly gentleman, allows her to go in first. As he's talking to her, he drops the word broad, and she takes offense and slams the door closed in his face. They see, once they are gathered on their view screen, an image of Robin riding on the running boards of a large truck, and we don't know what that is. We then cut to the JSA satellite rocketing up into space towards the satellite that Brainwave is on. We cut to Robin, who is riding on the running boards of a large tractor trailer marked Danger Explosives. He says, easy, easy, there. I've done all I can, aimed that dynamite truck toward the grass fissure, set it to crash, and he dives off as the truck crashes into the fissure. Now remember, he is in South Africa, Cape Town, where a giant hole opened up, emitting these poisonous vapors that were knocking everyone out. The cork action by Green Lantern didn't work. Green Lantern and Dr. Fate were knocked out, leaving only Robin, who now is trying to seal up the big hole in the ground by steering a dynamite truck into it. Now, he steered it by standing outside on the running board of the passenger side. Okay, trucks, maybe that was the steering wheel side in Cape Town, South Africa. I don't know. It's all kind of weird there. But blows up, seals the hole, but the vapor is still leaking. The truck's explosion closed off the fissure. Now, that deadly Freon, which we know it's Freon, that's not what was said last issue, but Freon knocking everyone out. The fissure's gone, but the gas is still escaping. That's flat out impossible, as Robin is standing overlooking the rubble, looking at the fissure, emitting this gas, and off to the side are an unconscious laying on the ground, Green Lantern and Dr. Fate. Arguably, two of the more powerful members of the Justice Society of America. Kind of interesting that they both got teamed up together. Robin's thinking, there's an explanation, but it's crazy. Unfortunately, I've only got one way to check it out. Step one. Remove the nose filters I put on after the gas knocked out Dr. Fate and Green Lantern. Step two, take a deep breath and pretend the air is crystal clean. If I'm wrong, I've got 10 seconds before. And then he speaks out and says all of this was internal monologue. Speaks out, ha, who says deductive reasoning is old hat? Any gas fissure which can't be closed by a dynamite explosion isn't a gas at all. It's an illusion. So there really wasn't gas. But then he's attacked by 245 yellow-garbed ne'er-do-wells. Okay, fellas, break it up. Whoever you are, you may have caught me by surprise, but I don't stay surprised for long. And then from off-panel above him, someone is saying, hold it right there, Robin, before you do something you may regret later. You're making a mistake, son. Another illusion, he says. Afraid so, friend, Green Lantern says as he and Dr. Fate enter the scene. When you busted up that last gas illusion, it must have broken a spell of some sort. hardly a spell, Green Lantern, more like a psychic compulsion, which means our enemy is brainwave. So on Earth 2, the only evildoer that possibly could create psychic compulsions is a man that hasn't been seen for a while. We don't know exactly what time, 25 years, our time, because he's been in prison. So someone that, as far as you know, is in prison, you suddenly think is the one that's responsible for this. That's kind of curious to me. Brainwave, that name does keep turning up, doesn't it, says our narrator. For example, on another monitor screen, this one programmed for Seattle, Washington, we see that Hawkman is flying with Dr. Midnight, and they are attacked by a group of five yellow-clad ne'er-do-wells. Dr. Midnight slips and slides over Hawkman, trying to allow Hawkman to freely use his arms to punch and hit and whatever the bad guys. Well, in trying to slip down and hold onto his legs, he slips off completely and starts to fall to the ground. We then cut to a couple minutes beforehand, and we see the Star-Spangled Kid, Star Rod, flying over everything, looking for somebody to save, looking for something to do. And then he suddenly has an idea. He's been reading up on the current era's science, because, again, he is 20 years into the future from when he was. Okay, let's try that again. He's been shunted 20 years into the future in one of his most recent missions, escapades, shall we say. So he's been reading up on earthquakes and how they're caused by faults in the Earth's crust. What I have to do, this is him thinking, as he is now burning, melting a hole into the ground and flying into the hole. What I have to do is reach deep into one of the largest plates, right? One of the largest faults. And once I'm there, use my cosmic rod to start a counterquake vibration. And then I've got to get out before the crack snaps shut with me inside. And you see that as we're seeing this, the images are getting closer and closer and closer to him. He is drawn closer to us. And then finally, he zooms out of the hole that he has melted just in time, as with a great choom, it closes back up. And as he zooms out of this hole, he does so just in time to intercept the falling Dr. Fate, the two of them tumbling head over heel to the ground. Immediately jumping up, Star-Spangled Kid sees what's going on in the skies above with Hawkman and the yellow-clad brainwave, we find out, led ne'er-do-wells. So he zooms up there, hauling Dr. Midnight with him, and the three heroes, Hawkman, Star-Spangled Kid, and Dr. Midnight, start slugging these guys in midair. They finish with them. Dr. Midnight grabs one and says, "We want answers, my friend, and we want them quickly. You mentioned a name when you attacked us, Brainwave. Is he the man who sent you? I'm warning you, speak the truth. I can tell if you're lying." And the dude says, yeah, Brainwave's our boss. And Dr. Midnight thinks, interesting. I can see by the man's infrared pattern that he's serious. But that just raises another question. What on earth is Brainwave doing and why? Cut back to Brainwave's satellite, where he is using some kind of machine to energize his ancient old friend, who was found, we see in a panel here, at the Skid Row mission in the Bowery. So he was living a destitute life in a Skid Row mission in the Bowery, and Brainwave found him and helped him, and now he's suffusing him with this juice from one of his machines on his satellite. And suddenly the man beefs up, and we find out that he is Degaton. Now, I don't recognize this outfit, and I'm going to go out on a rope and assume that this is the person that is referred to as Per Degaton, but I don't know that for sure, because all through this issue, Brainwave just calls him Degaton, and like I said, he's a big, thick, burly kind of dude that I don't necessarily recognize Degaton as having been. I thought he was more a brainiac, you know, a mechanical intelligence genius, but this guy is kind of brutish looking. Now, later on in the story, he does show that he is super intelligent and starts doing some things. Brainwave, you did it, but you still haven't told me how. It was nothing, old friend. By creating images of disasters, interspersed with real disasters predicted by my computers, I forced the JSA into active situations where I could use my machines to drain their will energy. We didn't see any of that, so all of that was invisible to the naked eye because Rick Estrada did not draw that I could tell any of it. And then fed it into me. Brilliant brainwave. This is Decaton speaking. Though I don't understand why you chose to involve those young heroes. Somebody starts beating on the outer hull of the satellite to get in, and breaking through is Power Girl, quickly followed by Wildcat and the Flash. Fighting ensues, punchy-punchy, brainwave zapping. Decaton transforms a communications laser into a stasis ray and zaps the Flash with it. Then he also creates a force field around himself that repels Power Girl as she tries to stop Decaton from flash frying. See what I did there? Yeah. The Flash anymore. Brainwave then zaps the Flash with one of his brainwaves, only to have Dr. Fate, Hawkman, Robin, Dr. Midnight, Star Spangled Kid, and Green Lantern suddenly appear. Did you miss me? How long was I gone? Hard to tell. So, cool thing about this image here that has, like I said, Dr. Fate, Hawkman, Robin, Dr. Midnight, Green Lantern, and Star Spangled Kid pop into Brainwave's satellite is the next panel. Same level, broken by a border, is the rest of the fight. So it's like a one complete image that's just been cut in half and separated a little bit. It's kind of cool. I'm not used to really seeing the art done like that. But now we have the entire super squad on Brainwave's satellite fighting him. Brainwave somehow takes a statue of Atlas and turns it into a locomotive creature that follows his orders. This, I think, is kind of reminiscent of the scene that's on the cover, but the Atlas statue jumps after Dr. Midnight, starts going hand-to-hand with Dr. Midnight. Power Girl jumps over at Decaton, knocking him down, Brainwave watching all of this. Robin attempts to attack Brainwave, who with a brainwave grabs Robin and throws him against Power Girl, knocking her off Decaton, who then uses his brain to create a sonic cannon, which he fires at Hawkman. Those that haven't been knocked out, which actually turn out to be the three youngest members, notice that Brainwave is not being fought against and go after him, but he's erected some kind of shield. Well, no, it's not a shield. I apologize. That's kind of what it looks like by the art, but they get through enough that Brainwave is able to put the brain whammy on all of them. And right after that, sets his satellite falling into the sun with everybody, including himself, on it. No, that's not right. Wait a minute. Let me look here. Let me see. Nope. Again, I apologize. He puts a lot of his brainwave juice into a gravity displacement beam, rather, and shoves the Earth towards the sun, which, yeah, I'm really confused now that I'm looking at this more closely. So the Earth is moving towards the sun because of Brainwave's machine. Now, Decaton surrounds Brainwave in a force field so that he can't be touched by any of the heroes while Brainwave is continuing to juice this machine that is forcing the Earth towards the sun. So Power Girl, Green Lantern, and Dr. Fate, who are the only apparently conscious heroes, team up with Green Lantern and Fate, adding their own special juice to Power Girl. Yeah, that sounds kind of disgusting, doesn't it? Yeah, I don't mean it that way. Driven by Green Lantern's remorseless beam, protected by a mystic spell, Power Girl bursts from Brainwave's satellite. What she does next is a feat which the Supergirl of Earth 1 would find almost ridiculously simple. Shoving it sunward, slowly straining every nerve and muscle, she throws herself against the satellite. So, to protect the Earth, which Brainwave is pushing into the sun, Supergirl Power Girl goes into space with the help of Green Lantern and Dr. Fate and starts pushing Brainwave's satellite into the sun. And within the rapidly overheating spacecraft, certain startling changes are already beginning to occur as the face-saving illusion created by Brainwave to conceal his terrible ugliness begins to break down. Okay, so to save the Earth from being pushed into the sun, Supergirl, Green Lantern, and Dr. Fate push Brainwave's satellite into the sun, and as it gets near the heat, the satellite and Brainwave, who now starts looking a little bit like Dr. Savannah from Captain Marvel, I think Dr. Savannah, white outfit, big dome, and big white spectacles on his face. That's what Brainwave is looking like now. Looks like Degaton is melting also. Everybody is sweating. Once everything gets all nasty, yucky, melty, Supergirl pushes the satellite back out of range of the sun so everything can cool off. And then we have a ta-ha, yuck it up moment here with the kids and Wildcat calling them kids, and Power Girl tells all the things that she did and everything. So this Power Girl Wildcat thing is apparently going to be a thing moving forward. Very confusing ending to the story. Little unsatisfying because it was a little bit difficult to follow, but ultimately the bad guys won, Brainwave and Degaton lost, the Earth was saved. So I guess, you know, as far as superhero comics, everything worked out appropriately. That was very confusing. I think that's pretty much taken all my juice that I had out of that story for it. Next time up is going to be All-Star Comics Presents the Super Squad, issue number 60. Talk to you guys then. Ciao.